Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Cause and Effect Radio, brought to you by UHY Advisors. Now, here's your hosts.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Cause and Effect Radio, and I have with me today Amy Gallagher. How are you doing, Amy?
I'm good. How are you?
Now, Amy, you're with UHY. What's your role there?
A principal with the Resource Solutions team.
Principal. That sounds pretty important. Mm-hmm. What are you doing every day for folks?
A lot of recruiting. Mm-hmm. Got clients that call us when they need senior level accounting resources to help them with their critical projects, and then also the internal recruiting and hiring for our office.
Now, are there a lot of people that have that need?
Oh, absolutely. The war for talent is raging. So,
absolutely. It's a war for talent.
It's a war for talent. Talent, not talent.
So now, how does somebody stand out for you in terms of talent? What catches your eye?
And aside from just their hard skills, we're really looking for people who have, the word actually, I think my theme word for the week, and this might sound corny, but I've been reading up on it a lot, is grit.
Grit.
Yeah. So if we can really identify if someone has grit and drive and that ability to be persistent and go for those long-term goals.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. And then what are we going to talk about today?
Actually, it's kind of a topic that I think a lot of people are talking about, and it just even comes up outside of the workplace today. But, essentially you'd think about millennials, but we really want to focus on what some of the similarities are across the generations in the workplace today.
Because today, aren't several generations kind of in play at the same time?
They are. There's several generations in the workplace today, and we're seeing a lot of new things come about, new ideas and new concepts come about, not just from the millennials, but also, the reaction to some of the things that they're trying to get implemented in their workplace today.
So who'd you bring with you?
My awesome team. So we've got a couple of people here. We've got Russ Woods, and he is now a consultant with our Blackline implementation team, but I'll let him speak for himself. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Nikki Springsteen. She's a senior recruiter with our firm as well.
Cool. So Russ, what are you doing for UHY?
I am a consultant on our accounting automation team.
A consultant?
Yes.
That sounds important. What do you consult about?
It's really finance transformation and process optimization. We work with companies, and right now we utilize a tool called Blackline. It's an accounting automation software, and we come into an organization and we help to transform their financial processes so they best fit the tool.
Cool. And Nikki, what are you doing?
So I recruit with Amy. I'm recruiting on our critical projects and also for internal roles as well.
So, have you worked for other companies other than UHY?
I have. I've worked in I've recruited for a lot of different types of environments. So I've done IT, technology recruiting, corporate sales, operational, and then now for our resource solutions group. So a lot of different types of profiles and types of candidates that I've worked with
You've recruited many generations?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. So, Amy, why don't you walk us through the different generations that exist today?
Absolutely. So, you've got a couple of ones right now. So certainly there's the traditionalist or the silent generation. They have a couple of different names out there.
And that's who's names them? Whose job is it to name them?
That's interesting. I don't know.
No.
Do we all decide this?
You stumped us already.
No, is it some blogger says, hey, these are Generation Z, and then everybody's like, yeah, I guess they are Generation Z.
If I can make an assumption, I think that's kind of what it is. I think whoever starts talking about it.
First, they get to name it. All right. So now we know.
Yeah.
People name them, but the names originate because of some reasons. Like, obviously, baby boomers, that name came around because somebody noticed that there was a boom in baby. And Generation X, maybe they named you guys Generation X because you were a little more rebellious. I don't know. The X just sounds right, but
So sure. So the generations that are in play right now, millennials we've talked about, mm-hmm. What is the criteria to be on Team Millennial?
Well, there's, generally speaking, and these are just date ranges, but it really looks to be anywhere from 1977 to 1994 in terms of a birth date. And so that's kind of the date range. And then clearly, each generation is marked by a formative, event. So mm-hmm. The millennials, the technology boom, And this is the first generation to be born into technology.
The internet.
Right.
The internet.
And then, so that's that group. You mentioned Generation X. So that's the preceding before the millennials or Generation X. And that's what, the 60s to the...
Yeah, 65 to 80.
So okay, so that's that range. Mm-hmm. And then before that, it was baby boomers. Mm-hmm. And then how they get to be the greatest generation. That's kind of seems unfair. Like that some guy writes a book and then they get to be the greatest generation?
Well, I mean, they were kind of...
Because of the war?
They came out of, you know, very tough times to make things prosperous again.
All right.
And they were the people who grew up in the Depression as well. Mm-hmm. They get credit for that. They came out of the war. And then you saw a big boom. And because of World War II, you know, manufacturing was huge. And the economy was doing well. Everybody had jobs. And it feels like there was a lot of chaos in the world. And they were the generation to really put America and the values of America and the American dream on the map.
And it's a respectful title, if you think about that.
It's
the greatest generation. Yeah. It's a very respectful.
They were almost building our society. The society that we know today, they were an integral part in building that.
Did we call people before that names? Or were they the first group that we're calling names?
We have traditionalists, I believe, were the generation
before
that.
That's another name for...
Is that a name for the...
So I'm not sure.
Like,
maybe not.
What would we call like the...
ancestors? I'm just teasing.
What would we call the founding fathers?
Pioneers.
I don't know. We should name those. To me, that's a pretty good generation. They started this thing, right? You got to give them props.
And maybe none of these generation names matter anyways, because in 30 years down the road, everybody will forget about the baby boomers.
The millennials will be, we're the greatest generation.
The greatest generation in the world.
Upon further review.
That's what we should go for, guys. Fight for that.
So now, when you're dealing with these different generations, what are some similarities?
You know, actually, one of the things that came up in our conversations, I want to kind of tee this over to Nikki here, but you were talking about, is it generational or is it really life stages that really cause some of the differences or where people are?
Yeah, a lot of the things that I've seen, you know, it doesn't really matter what generation now, because I'm seeing the same things personally when I'm recruiting for a lot of different age groups. And flexibility is a huge one. Does it really matter what... you know, what generation you fall within. People want to be able to work from home, work remotely, or, you know, come in early, leave early, those types of things. Everybody sort of wants them now. Millennials have been a little bit more, I think, vocal about it. But ambition is another one. And then also we all want to do meaningful work. We want to see everyone wants to see, you know, what they're doing make a difference. They don't want to just come in, punch a clock and leave. You know, they want to see progress, and that's across the board. So, you know, it's almost not necessarily generational to a sense. Sometimes, you know, is it a stage in life that people are in? Because I'm seeing that in not just the millennials or not just Gen X. It's a lot of people are, you know, wanting the same things now.
Right, because and no matter what the generation, they're saying, hey, that's a good idea. I would like life balance, you know? Can I get some of that, you know?
Absolutely.
Now, is this one of those things where every generation thinks their generation has their own issues, and they always think, like, the younger people, they don't know, they don't appreciate. Like, isn't this just, when you look at it in context?
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree. My whole opinion on it is, if we were in the 70s and we had access to the internet that we have now, you would see many, many articles about the young.
Right.
Now we have the technology now where people have the medium to get on there and write articles about the younger generation and blast it out to everybody. We've never been able to do that before. People have always complained about younger generations.
But now you can hear everybody's opinion.
Exactly. So I think you have the internet for 100 years now. You'd have 100 years of articles.
I can't wait 100 years from now to see how this plays out.
Look in the archives.
So now from a company standpoint and you're hiring, and do you have a different strategy of attracting this group as opposed to maybe previous groups? Do you have to say, like you mentioned, Nikki, about meaning? You know, I don't think in the 50s they were like, hey, at the plant, what do you really want out of life? You know, what's your legacy going to be? It was more like, look, I need you to turn that wrench 400 times an hour. That's what I need from you. So just shut up and turn the wrench.
Right.
And now, doesn't the employer have to say, you know, have to care more and try to help you achieve kind of these goals and have purpose?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they need to be able to recognize that, and they need to, you know, I think people just want to be heard, and they don't want to just feel like another person.
You don't want to be a cog in the machine, but back in the day, people were happy to be cogs in the machine.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. And I think that came from the environment that they came up in. Like you were saying, back in the day in the 50s, things, we were just out of a war. So I think your meaning of life was really just being able to make a good living.
And then not be in a war.
Exactly. It'd be able to put food on the table. Yeah. And now where we're at in a society, it's not quite the needs aren't quite the same. It's easier to have food on the table. It's easier to have the things you need. So we have to find meaning in work now, because maybe.
Is that true though? Do we need to find meaning in work? Is that work's job now, is to help a person find meaning?
I don't think it's work's job. I don't think it's necessarily, I think it's kind of a push and pull. I think we want to have meaning at work. It's not necessarily the company's responsibility to give you meaning. But that's just kind of where we spend a majority of our lives somewhere. I think we want to be somewhat internally fulfilled in what we're doing.
I think they just need to be aware of that. Just them knowing that that's something that's important. You know, you don't want to catch someone off guard like that and realize that someone's been unhappy because for however many years they've been unappreciated or, unimportant to someone. So I think just knowing that and being aware of that, like Russ said, it's not necessarily their responsibility, but it's smart for them to do that. But it's almost irresponsible for them not to at this point.
And I would say I would think it's in the company's best interest, because if you can provide a way to, if you can find a way to provide your employee meaning, then you're going to get more productivity out of them. They're going to be happier and going to work, and you're going to get more out of your employee.
To kind of piggyback on that, if one of the areas that we help our clients with, we do process improvement, and a lot of our methodology and the way that we help our clients specifically, well, both in manufacturing and in transactional process areas. And if we go into a manufacturing setting or we go into a group where they're doing repetitive, redundant tasks, when you think about lean, and I'm not by any means a lean expert, but I know enough to be dangerous, but one of the things that we talk about change management is that when we work with our clients, we want to work with the people doing the work. We want to see what they're doing, but then we really want their ideas on how to make it better. Because again, they want to know that they're being heard, and that gives that, and that their ideas are being implemented, and that they know how to do it faster, better, more efficient, more accurate. So when we can take that information and help see, provide to them a way that they can see, like, your ideas were heard, and now we're doing it like this, that's giving them more meaning. But there are differences in the expectations if you do take a job where it is shift work. Mm-hmm. You can't demand that you want to do. You can't operate a machine whenever you feel like it from your house.
You can't telecommute.
Right, you can't do that. So there are some parameters within that, but there are other ways, like we just mentioned, that may be able to help satisfy some of that, where I would, again, I wasn't there, but if you think back on the early manufacturing days, I'm pretty sure they were just kind of told, this is your job, this is what you do. I mean, isn't that why labor unions came around to help provide some sort of representation for their voice?
Right. So now when you're working with clients and maybe they don't have a lot of millennials in their workforce, how do you help them kind of transition?
Well, I think there's enough information out there. So if there are people who are, all companies today are starting to, not all, I hate to use generalizations like that, but so many companies today are looking to find more people to help them because they are growing. We are seeing companies grow and expand. Also, you have natural attrition. So our baby boomers are starting to retire.
Right.
A delayed retirement, I would imagine, right? Which is another impact to why we see some of the behaviors we see today in the younger generations. But they do need to kind of at least show some awareness, because they're going to have a hard time competing for top talent. I do want to add to that, though, that it is the huge companies have, you know, more of an ability to have, you know, take home your lunches and on-site dry cleaning and, you know,
the masseuse food, and a beanbag chairs.
Yeah, and a napping station and whatever. But all of that sounds great and good, but you know it's there to help improve productivity,
absolutely,
right? So that's why it's there. So you can spin it any way you want. Right. But so then you get to the medium-sized companies and they don't have those types of resources to do it. So they are having to get more creative in ways to kind of
What are they doing? I mean, I mean, an easy way, mm-hmm. I mean, not an easy, maybe it's simple way in sure. terms of execution is to let people be heard. You know, like mm-hmm. that sounds simple, like, oh, right. just let people be heard. But, you know, when you're yeah. dealing with human beings, that sometimes let isn't so heard. Simple, right?
We actually engaged with a, it's a pulse survey. So every week, a pulse survey goes out to the entire company and the entire office on different days. But it asks some questions like, how engaged are you this week? How frequently do you receive feedback from your boss? How important is it for you to feel like you get time with your leadership team? How well do you know your coworkers? Is health and wellness important to you? And it gives us a gauge on their engagement so that we can be on top of when we need to adjust and modify and course correct along the way. Mm-hmm. And it gives an anonymous way, which they like, to be able to communicate maybe feedback that to the leadership team or to the office that maybe they wouldn't want to share directly, but it's important information that we want to be able to capture and address.
And we were speaking of the baby boomers yeah. leaving, and I believe the statistics show that anywhere from, and correct me if I'm wrong, but 50 to 75% of the workforce within the next 10 years is going to be comprised of millennials. Mm-hmm. And just speaking from my point of view and kind of my, you know, I think I wouldn't call myself a typical millennial, but at my age, 26, I think I fall right into, when you hear the griping about millennials, I'm the age group.
You're no. who I picture in my head.
Yes. I am the age group. I am who you are griping about, I guess. But the big thing, I think what we want in is the, like what Amy was talking about, the tool we use for the open communication between leadership. I think that's a big thing for us. We want to be able to have access to management, to the leadership positions, because I think we respect their wisdom, and I think we want to learn from their wisdom. And I think what frustrates us, or what's frustrated me in the past, is being with an organization where a lot of decisions are being made and you can't ask why, and you can't learn why, and you can't learn about the strategy, and you can't gain that wisdom just because the way the management structure is, you don't get access to the wisdom. And I think that's essentially kind of what we want.
But do you think that that stems from how the generations were parented differently, in that this is, you have an expectation to have your opinion stated, and maybe previous generations had a tendency that children were seen but not heard.
And because I told you.
Right.
Which and then totally just, doesn't fly in my house anymore. It worked for me, but my kids are like, oh. Yeah.
I think that obviously we're the generation that thinks our opinions matter a little more, but I think that's just a product of, personally, I think it's a product of social media and where technology is, because for the longest time, we've been able to state our opinions and get reactions from it. So we've grown into adult, you know, when we grow into adulthood, we think, hey, we do have opinions. And, you know, we do. I think we just want to, whether the opinion's right or wrong, I think we want to be able to state the opinion, state the idea, and then get the feedback. I don't think it's necessarily, if it's a bad idea, we just want to be able to state our ideas.
But feedback is important to you.
Yeah.
Where maybe previous generations, feedback wasn't that. I mean, it was nice to have, but it wasn't a must have.
Mm-mm. No, yeah, there was the expectation that if you no news is good news,
right?
And you have your annual performance review, and if there was something major that needed to be addressed, obviously you have that discussion, but you don't need frequent, constant likes.
Right, like
thumbs
exactly.
up,
right.
But, you know, cheers and.
I mean, I don't like that, but I don't believe in the whole likes and cheers thing, because that's, to me, that puts a spin on it. Like, I need this reinforcement or validation. I just want to be heard. That's it. And if my idea is wrong or if my opinion's bad, I want to be told why so I can learn.
So wouldn't you say
go from there?
The baby boomers wanted to be heard when they were out, you know, protesting and marching?
Absolutely, they wanted to be heard, but unfortunately, they didn't have the devices.
Right, so they had to physically be heard.
Exactly. We have so many platforms in
text,
our generation. Yeah.
Email. I mean, I can communicate with you instantly nowadays. And it wasn't always like that.
But I can't respond as quickly as you all want us to. So.
But you still know it's there, and you can get back to me rather than, okay, let's talk in a week, when literally the
look,
only
right
way we
now,
can talk.
Russ is doing this show. He's tweeting. It's on his Facebook.
I know.
He's live streaming this thing, right? You got six different channels going, right?
It's funny you say that. I am actually not. I'm not on social media that much. But
well, now Facebook's not cool, right? Like, so it's constantly like
it changes.
Right? Keep in touch with your grandparents.
You don't have time for
your
face.
Mom and dad.
See, I believe in face-to-face communication. I believe in authentic communication. I don't like to be behind a screen, but that's just me. But a lot of my friends are that way too. But I think, you know, it's just everything we have is just a medium for communication. It's just a tool for communication. And I think there are good, there are a lot of good things about it. And the reason my generation wants so much feedback is because we've experienced instant feedback for most of our childhood and most of our teenage years. Everything is instantaneous to us. Any information we want, we get it. So it's hard for us to wait.
Mm-hmm. So now when you're working in the workforce and you're not getting that, what's the best way for a millennial to kind of step up and say, hey, this is something that we think is important and I'm not getting it? Like, how can they do that in an elegant way that would be heard by management, you think?
That sounded pretty elegant the way you just did it.
Just write that down. Write that down.
I'll
send them to you first.
Ask. Ask and you go shall receive.
Yeah, we want that open door, transparent environment. We want to be able to just walk up and ask.
Let's get real. If I'm working for somebody and I come to you and I say, hey, I'd like to get some time on your calendar. I'd love to speak with you. I'd love to bounce some ideas and hear your feedback. And you tell me no.
I think you're on looking for a job mode.
Immediately. Yeah, I'm not. Yeah, absolutely. Because then I am not going to feel value. I'm going to feel like I'm a waste of your time instead of valuable.
Now, what's your expectation in terms of a career? Do you see every job as, oh, I'm going to retire from here one day? Because back in the day, that's how they thought a job was that I'm here and I'm going to get a watch at the end of 25 years or whatever. Is that your expectation when you walk into an opportunity?
I think people want that, obviously.
Yeah, I think that would be great. That's something that
But does it feel like the impossible dream, or is it you think it's out there?
I think it's something that we don't necessarily believe in as much anymore. Actually, this is something we talked a lot about. And, our generation has seen when it comes to the workplace and our careers, we've seen our parents go through a much different career path. They were on the up and up, and then all
layoffs,
of a sudden,
extreme highs and lows.
Yeah. And we talked about, you can, as a college graduate, you're competing for entry level jobs with people that are your parents' age just because they need to get something. Right. So it's definitely changed in that sense. And so I almost think we view ourselves as a brand. I'm actually a brand on my own, and I need to build myself. I need to train myself. Yeah. And because it's great to, we hope and we want to feel like our company is loyal to us, but it's just, it's almost like we've got this idea in the back of our heads that the be prepared for the bottom to always fall out.
Right.
So, it's not enough anymore to just go and do a great job, because even if you do, you could be
right.
You could be
and, gone. It's not yours.
Exactly.
It has nothing to do with you.
And that still happens, today. But I think it's, you really just have to just pay attention to make sure you're not stagnant. You're using the newest and the newest and the best tools, and you're networking more so than ever. And that's we're using digital media to network. We're going to, we're using face to face. We're talking to our managers. I mean, we're very vocal now, and I think we're much more aware of the fact that we have to rely on ourselves and always be looking for, or ready to tackle the next thing just in case.
Right, and I think the biggest difference, and I always, a lot of times when I'm thinking about this stuff and talking about it, I always go back to technology. And there's a difference in technology. And nowadays, back in the day, 50s, 60s, 70s, my parents' generation, you found a company, you stuck with them. Why? Because it was a little more laborious to go looking for a job. Nowadays, I can literally get an app on my phone, and there's 100 jobs
you're
I can
apply to. Swiping left and right.
Swiping left and right.
They're letting us know when jobs are out.
It is so easy to look for a job nowadays, and you know what's there. You know who's hiring. So there's just so much, there's more opportunity, there's more options, there's more choices. So the moment, it used to be you get in a company, a few things bother you, but I'll stick it out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, a few things bother you, you can say, hey, there's a company out there who they're not going
to
work.
Well, we expect to talk about it. We want to tell you. We want to be verbal about it.
Right.
And if we don't feel heard, it's all kind of playing together, right? If we don't feel heard, companies also, we know how easy it is to look for a job. Employers know too. We, like you said, you can have an app on your phone where we don't even have to look. They look for us. Mm-hmm.
We can get alerts
like, hey, you should look at this position. Well, okay. I didn't really think about it,
but that's
an opportunity.
I think we manage our careers like a business nowadays. What's the big difference? My income is my revenue. Then I have my expenses.
Right. And you have a client, your boss is your client.
Exactly.
Right?
100, right. Yeah, totally. And you hear the word with my generation, you hear the word gig a lot.
Right.
So I think with the we sometimes see jobs more as gigs.
This is what we're doing right now.
Right. And with, like I said, technology, you have the, if you can figure it out, you have the ability to make money by using your certain skill sets to take on small little gigs. And it's just, there's just so many more options and opportunities to go out and make an income for yourself than there used to be.
Now, are you attacking your career in that way? Like, let's not talk about you individually, but maybe people you know, let's broaden it to that. Are there people that have jobs that maybe back in the day, your parents would have been like, that's good, they got a job and they're done, but they also are doing Uber and they're selling some, you know, jewelry on the side, and they got some side gigs or side hustles going right at the same time because they have a portfolio, because they have different revenue streams, because right they're looking at themselves as a brand, like you said.
Right.
Are you seeing that happening in your generation?
I think the access to that, we are seeing that happening. Obviously, I know friends who work full time and drive Uber on the weekends just to make an extra buck.
I mean, and it's not looked at like you're unsuccessful because you right have to have a second job. It's like, wow, like you said, it's a hustle. You know, you want more, you go get it. We don't have to just rely on one.
Yeah, it all just comes down to it. I think it's regardless of generation. It's just person by person. Do you want more money? Yes. Okay, here are the other ways to go get it.
But now like anybody could be an Uber driver
right
in 15 minutes. Absolutely. Almost, you know.
Right.
So now, Amy, as from your side of the mm-hmm desk, how does this impact you in your recruiting and, you know, kind of developing the kind of benefits that serve this group?
Well, it's always evolving, but it's a challenge.
You're learning some things?
I've heard some of this before. Trust me, Russ and I've had a lot of discussions about this. The thing I think that the Generation X in me struggles the most with is the perception that it seems like the other generation doesn't necessarily want to pay their dues. There's no sticking it out when the going gets rough. They're like, well, I'm out then. And that can be frustrating because as an employer, you're investing in the person you're hiring. Right. When they start day one, granted, they may have a lot of skills they're bringing to the table, they're still going through a learning curve. We're not getting our return on that investment in 3 months, 6 months,
Can you maybe define what you mean by pay your dues? Because it's a vague statement. Because that could be taken in a few ways. That could be taken in some ways like, okay, well, you just have to be here at least 3 years. Does that make sense?
I think you have to demonstrate that you're adding value over a period of time, that you're rising to the occasion, you're meeting goals, you're meeting expectations, right, you're exceeding goals, you're exceeding expectations, you're raising your hand, you're taking on additional tasks and responsibilities, and in not just adding skills and strengths and talents to yourself, you're also bringing that to your company as well, so that it's a mutual benefit to both parties.
And I think that needs to be emphasized.
It feels a little one-sided sometimes.
I think that needs to be emphasized more because I feel like pay your dues can come off as you just got to be here or you just got to gain some seniority. Obviously, you got to do good work.
I don't believe that. I'm seeing a lot of companies shift away from promotions being based on tenure. So good. You just got to be here because you could have somebody who's never really going to show that they're going to have upward mobility just based on their
right
work performance.
Right.
But I also think that the people that we're hiring, they want to know that they can get promoted, not just because mm-hmm of how long they've been in the job, but because of the merits of their work.
But don't you think a lot of this has to do with transparency in terms of what the expectations are? Mm-hmm. Like, just like the younger hire may think like, look, I know how to do this. I'm awesome. So I have an expectation, you know, I'm going to make this amount mm-hmm of money. I'm going to have this kind of role in this period of time, right? So as long mm-hmm as there's clear defining of expectations and what each person brings to the party, doesn't that help each side kind of work symbiotically? As yep opposed right to in your, you know, in the manager's head, you have this, you know, objective for them that maybe wasn't clearly, or in your head, you think it's clearly communicated, mm-hmm, but in their head, it's like, look, I'm getting the work done. What do you care if I'm, you know, doing my fantasy football when you walk by?
Well, I want to make sure you are doing your fantasy football when we walk right by, but
we do get pretty competitive.
We do get very competitive. And I do also want to go back to the pay your dues thing too, because there are, just real quickly, because I didn't add this to it, there are things I've had to do over my career that I didn't want to do, mm-hmm, but my boss needed them done, or it was the right thing to do for the company. And there
regardless
were,
of work, that's character building too.
It's
so it's
character
a good thing.
Building.
It's
yes,
a good thing. Yeah.
And it may be 3 months of things kind of not being good. I mean, have you worked in a company when the recession is in place and you're fighting for every little thing, every little bill you can get out there, and every little bit of work? Those are things that you there does build character, and you want to see that the people you bring on board can stick it out when the going does get tough.
And
too.
I think people maybe one thing that is lost in my generation. You know, growing up, you see it all on the internet, and all you ever hear is follow your passion, do what you love.
You'll never work a day in your life.
If you love what you do, you'll never work a day.
We all want to do that. That's why I'm eventually trying to get on radio so I can love what I do every day.
I'm going to be a ballerina.
It's not too late.
It's not realistic. And I think we forget that we call it work for a reason. Like, no, you're not going to go to work every day.
But I mean, I don't know if I agree with you when you say it's not realistic. It may not be realistic if you want to make $1 million,
right?
But you can do what you want to do and follow your passion.
It is,
but it may not equate to $1 million. Don't combine money and passion.
And I'm not talking
That's
about
a
money.
Good point too.
It is okay. Let me backtrack. I think it is realistic, but people need to understand that there are going to be tough times to get there. You're not going to come out of school and automatically love exactly what you're doing. Like you got to go through some, you know, nothing worthwhile was ever easy. So you got to understand that you got to go through some rough times. And I think maybe my generation has been lost on that
I think you guys have learned rough times. You saw it, maybe not you personally, or well, maybe in some ways, but your parents went through rough times. Your parents got laid off. Your parents had a nice house and then may not have had a house. Like, they had to deal with and had kids and had to deal with all that stress. I mean, I don't, you
they
know,
moved
maybe,
back in too.
Right. And then they got parents that they're about to move back in too. So, I mean, life punches everybody in the face.
It does, but I think
know,
personally,
that's part of the deal.
But I think you kind of got to do it on your own. You got to experience on your own. Obviously, you're going to take a lot of experiences from your parents. But when it comes to your career and your work, we have to understand, and maybe we need to do a better job at messaging this, but we have to understand that you're going to go through some storms. You're going to hit some big waves, but that's how you get to your dream. That's how you get to your passion. And I think too many of kids my age just ought to want to come straight out of school and be doing their passion. But it just doesn't work like that. It's a journey.
You don't even know what your passion is.
I know 100%. I know what my passion is.
You know what it is today.
But maybe our passions are different. Like, my passion, I can't tell you it's a concrete thing. Like, I can't tell you a job that I would do that would be my passion, but I know my
other
passion.
Other than the one you're in.
Other than the one I am, obviously.
And when you say it's right now in front of that microphone.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But no, like, my passion is I love working with people, and I hope one day to lead and inspire people. That's what I want to lead, motivate, and inspire people. Now, obviously, there are probably a lot of jobs that I could do. But maybe my generation.
But you can do that right now.
Exactly.
There's nothing stopping you from leading other people today. You can leave here today and lead people.
Right. I guess my generation wants to be able to do that at work. I guess that's it.
And maybe your generation should say, you know what, if I'm not getting fulfilled in my work, maybe I should create my own work and then fulfill myself and take responsibility for my own actions.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you.
As do I.
And maybe we are doing that.
I think you are.
Because all of my friends want to run their own businesses. It seems like a lot of kids my age want to run their own business. And we're seeing that we kind of have that ability if we just want to work towards it. So no, maybe we're not as loyal to companies anymore because we see the opportunity of, hey, I can go off on my own.
But now you understand the frustration of the companies.
Oh, yeah. I totally understand the frustration of the companies as well.
Because they're investing a lot to train you to go out and do your own thing.
Right.
So that's the balance that everybody has. Because remember, you said earlier, your boss is your client.
Right.
So you got to serve your client.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But it's just such a...
It's hard, huh?
It is hard. It's really hard. But the thing is, companies are kind of stuck in a corner because they have to invest in their people. They have no other choice. There's a quote by Richard Branson. He says, maybe not Richard Branson. I see him a lot on LinkedIn, but I saw this quote. It says, what if we invest in our people and they leave? And then a guy asks back, what if we don't and they stay?
Right.
So
very
you
true.
Have to invest in your people. And you know what? It's
some of them are going to leave.
It's a risk. Yeah.
It is a risk.
It's an obstacle, and you just, you know, obstacles calculated are part of the path.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's the, I think what's happening now is that these conversations are happening more, and they're more open in this environment. Like, we're having this conversation right now, and I don't know 50 years ago that this kind of conversation could happen inside of a company between the bosses and the employees in this kind of a free wheeling way.
No,
you agree with that, Amy?
Absolutely. You definitely didn't have that freedom. You came in, you did what you were told to do. So today, I've been fortunate enough to always work for companies where they were very open to dialogue and they wanted ideas. Mm-hmm. But I know that there are a lot of companies out there that are working hard to change how leadership is perceived by the rest of their employees, because it is a turnoff if you've got, you know, the execs behind their closed doors and you can't approach, you know, the executive floor, and all that whole thing is really a turnoff to to new employees in the workplace. So
I think we all just need to learn from each other because, well, let's look, my generation, we don't have wisdom yet. The older generations, they have a lot of wisdom and experience, and that's what we will learn from. But my generation is pretty tech savvy.
And you got a lot of energy.
We got a lot of energy. So there's, and the way I see it is, no matter what, I think you should approach working with others no matter what generation you're in or what age you are. I think every day you should think, what can I learn from this person? No matter if they're 20 years older than you, 20 years younger than you, I think we can all learn from each other.
Mm-hmm.
Because based off of how we grew up, we do all have, we have different strength. So I think I just think every company should make an effort to make sure that everybody tries to learn from each other. And I've heard of mentoring programs where you have, you know, you come in, you have an older person mentor a younger person, but then a reverse mentoring program as well, where you have
the younger person mentoring the older person.
Exactly. Because we have a lot
different skills.
We have different skills that just the older generations didn't have access to.
And it shouldn't be patronizing in the sense that the older person has all, you know, they're the keeper of all the knowledge, and then they're going to kind of share it with the younger person when they're ready, or when they earned it, or when they paid enough dues. It should be kind of this back and forth, fluid exchange of information.
We can, absolutely. We can all, you can learn from every single person you meet.
And that's what you want in an employee, right? You want that lifelong learner. You want the person that's open to learning. You don't want the person that thinks like, oh, I graduated, so I don't have to learn anymore. That's not going to fly in today's world, I'll tell you right now.
I know everything. Don't worry.
I'm done.
I've got a degree.
Exactly.
You know, the other tough part of this, too, is though the way that because new jobs can come about so easily for people, and money is a driver. Money is a driver across all generations, right? But, you know, again, this is another earlier conversation, but we can do all of the things that we're talking about and have all of the amazing communication programs and mentor programs and, you know, organizations within our organization to help, you know, fulfill every aspect. But when the company down the street is offering $20,000 a year more, it's very hard to not take that job. So we also have to come up with new ways to compensate and reward people that we do have to mitigate that risk as well. And that's a tough part.
That's a tough one because you want it to be a two-way street. But I don't know. What I'm hearing from Nikki and Russ is that money isn't the only driver. Do you think that you would move a job? I mean, maybe there is some number that would cause you to move a job. But if you were being heard and you felt that there was a path and that they were supporting and helping you build your personal brand, and you were given the flexibility and you were given all these intangibles that you're saying that are important to you, is that, would $5,000 a year make you change jobs? Would $10,000?
But does a 5% increase or 3% cost of living increase every year keep somebody?
Well, I don't know. I mean, they're going to have to answer that question. What's more important? Is it the money and not so great work environment?
Well, they can
really
get
great?
All See, the, of the great
The thing
things.
About us is
yeah, we, do
just,
we have to choose.
We want it all.
Right?
Yeah. we want the money and the fulfillment. But, no, I agree. I think if you're getting all the other things other than, $5,000, I don't think is going to sway you. Now, if somebody comes to you and says, we're going to give you $20,000 more, I think that'd be hard for anybody to turn down because, that's going to change your life a little bit. You might be more stressed at work, but outside of work, you know, things are different. But
everybody has a price.
Right. Everybody, absolutely. Everybody has a price. But, I think you might see us jumping around a little more, my generation jumping around a little more, because it's almost strategic in a way too. Because like I said, we managing your career like your own business. Like you can stay with a company for 10 years, But odds are, if you stay with that company for 10 years, you're lowering your potential for income. Because say you jump every 2 years, or you might make $50,000 at a company, work there for 1 year. Well, the next year, you might get a little raise. You might be making $52,000. Or you can go out, apply somewhere else, get recruited somewhere else, and they go, hey, we're going to bring you on at $56,000, $57,000. You go work there for 2 years, hop again, somebody might be bringing you on at $67,000.
So, and now you've seen multiple different types of environments and companies, and so you've got more money, more experience at this point. So now I'm a much more...
Maybe that comes from us seeing our parents getting laid off. Maybe we understand that, hey, we have to diversify our skill sets in case something does happen. Like you said, exactly. I don't want to spend 20 years with a company, learn one software, learn one process, and when I get laid off, I can't really transfer those skill sets. But if I spend a few years at multiple companies, you know, it's a little easier to protect yourself if something should happen. Something bad should happen.
But now, how does a company deal with that attitude?
Pay their people.
I don't think it's that.
I think you have to pay. Well, I think you have to make sure you're paying your people what they're worth. And then.
Well, first you have to agree on what they're worth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have to make. Right. And I think companies should take an initiative to make sure they're paying the market. What the market says you're worth. And then.
See, I think sometimes it might come down to having employees having the wisdom to realize that not everything is what it seems as well.
The grass isn't always greener on the other side.
Right. If you've spent a couple of years with the company, you're also now respected. You've got more flexibility. Your voice is heard.
Right.
You're proven. You have a track record. You get things done quicker because people know to respond to you. So there are things that you leave behind when you make a change.
Right.
So there's a trade-off. And to really evaluate that. And so if somebody were to come to me and say, hey, I'm thinking about making this change, this other company's offering me more money and more this, this, and this, it also comes back to maybe where Nikki was going with the different stages in life. If I've got two little kids at home and a company's coming to me and it's only $5,000 more, but they're going to meet my other demands, then maybe at this point in my life, that's the right choice for me.
Right.
As a baby boomer, and I don't mean to make any generalizations, but maybe I'm at a point in my life where I've kind of been there, done that, and now I want to do meaningful work. And if that comes at a $20,000 a year less compensation, that might be what I really want to do right now because I've worked so hard my whole career. Now I'm at a point where I can make those choices.
And follow your passion, like Russ said earlier.
And I see that a lot. Actually, that's a good point because I see that a lot in I guess you would call it the baby boomer generation, which surprises me. It took me a while to understand.
Why, you thought they were more materialistic?
No, just that someone would be okay with, you know, that money wasn't such a high driver. Priority or driver for, or title. Yeah. So many people now say, I just want to do what I like. It's just about the job. It's about the duties of the job. I want to be able to do what I know how to do. You know, they've been doing what they're good at, or they've got skills that go back, you know, 20, 30 years.
Right.
They want to use them. It's not necessarily, you know, what new talents can I learn at this point? It's like, I've got skills. I want to just use them. And just let me do that. So they'll take pay cuts, or they're like, it doesn't really matter what the title is. I didn't even think about that, but that's such a good point that I see that a lot more than it. I mean, it doesn't really surprise me anymore, but that took a while to kind of get used to. Right.
Now, the pros of that are you're getting a seasoned veteran into the organization that has a lot of skills, but maybe they have this superpower.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a negative of that is that demotivating for the younger people that are seeing a slot being filled with somebody that's older, and then that eliminates one of their paths.
It's, well, not that you brought it up. No, I'm just teasing. I'm not sure. It would probably depend on the situation.
It's like in sports, for example. Some teams, even though there's a veteran that may be better, they won't hire that veteran. They'd rather have a young person who may be not as good, but then there would be a place for them, you know, for their growth, where that person is kind of an older person filling a gap is kind of a growth stopper for that younger person.
Well, they also might be set in their own ways, too. So, like, if someone's younger, they might be a little
more
bit
pliable.
More, exactly. They don't have this preconceived notion of that's how I've done it for 10, 15 years. They're comfortable. So it's like, you know, it's really a matter of, do you want to deal with that. I mean, if you have the time and energy to do that every day and you just want to let someone sit there and kind of just know that they're doing what they're doing, great. But
I guess the company from a strategic standpoint has to make these decisions. Mm-hmm. Like, look, we might need somebody that has that skill and just be a rock star and just let that person do that for a period of time. And then we just deal with the repercussions of that as opposed to, okay, that may slow the growth of this other person, but we have an urgent need and we just got
to
deal with it.
Well, then I think I would put it on the company to spin it in a positive way and try and educate the employee about how much you can learn from this person. Because let's get obvious, this person isn't going to be in this role forever.
Right.
But they're bringing a lot of experience that you can learn. And this is only going to springboard your growth.
It's your mentor program that you're looking for.
Boom. It's only going to make you better.
But do they want to share it or do they just want to come in and do the job?
They could be in a silo and then they're just in and out.
Yeah, they might just be working because
it's more transactional. Could be more transactional of a relationship.
Right. Well, if it's a transactional, I don't think, if it's more of a transaction, like transactional role or...
They could be just going, look, I'm just going to come in here because I need to make another 50 grand for another 3 more years until my kid's out of college. So I'm just going to sit here. I just got laid off. So I just want to bang this out. I'm going to
Well, I guess it all depends on the role because...
I mean, in our... I mean, I have an entire practice area in that because Resource Solutions, we hire experienced accountants to go help our clients on projects. So they're not there to take the next permanent job or to compete for the next permanent role. They're there to bring their experience, bring their knowledge base, get the job done, help the staff if needed, and they're not a threat to anybody. But you have to have the experience to be able to step into those new organizations and quickly make an impact.
Right.
So it depends on your career and your background and your skills and your capabilities and what the goals of the organization are. But I think having a mix of everybody is really
good.
Beneficial to everyone.
Absolutely.
So now, but when you have a mix, when you're counseling clients and they have a mix, how do you implement, like Russ is saying, these kind of back and forth mentorships or job shadowings where each group can learn from each other? Like what's a way that a company could implement some sort of a program where the different generations can kind of learn from each other?
Well, it's about creating opportunities for dialogue and to build relationships. So sometimes having a more formal approach to it helps to bring those connections to light so that they can have those relationships. But they do need to be authentic. So hopefully, you know, at least having those initial reasons to meet and to build that relationship.
Like I know one good thing that we do, we have we call it our lunch lottery. So we take everybody's name.
There's more than one good thing.
We do.
We just do one.
Many good things.
This is just
our lunch program is great.
our wonderful lunch lottery program. One of many wonderful things. Everybody's name gets thrown into a bucket, and every month we pair up names, and you go have lunch with that person. So
that's kind of fun.
It doesn't have to be a work thing at all. It's kind of offsite.
So what are some of the lunches you've had?
I have had
just interesting ones. I don't want the boring ones.
Well, I have one coming up that I think is going to be very interesting. Absolutely. I have one coming up on Monday with our director of business development, who has a big focus on the practice that I'm in. The accounting.
Do you know this
practice person
at all?
I do know. Well, see, the beauty of UHY is we're a wonderful organization, and we have, and I'm not sucking up or anything. I truly believe we have some of the best people you can possibly work with. So fortunately, I come into work every day and there's not a person that I can't go talk to. There's not a person that's not willing to, you know, they may be busy at the time, but they're always willing to say, yeah, I can get you on my calendar. I can talk to you. Like it's amazing. There's such an open dialogue here. And I love it because I can learn so much from that. I'm very fortunate to be at a company that's like that. Mm-hmm. And I would encourage other companies to be like that. Now, it may not work. There's different dynamics it may not work in, but I truly believe that, I mean, I think this is all, work is all about relationships. Yeah, we work for these companies and you hear these brands, but what the company is the people that make the company up. And, you know, they say people don't leave companies, people leave managers.
Right.
So I think a big focus is no matter what your age, no matter what your generation is to make an effort to really create relationships in your organization, really get to know each other, really get to understand each other.
And I think if you're part of the recruiting process or hiring process, when you're building your teams and you're building your company, you need to keep that in mind. You want to have, a strong, I say diverse, just a diverse team because like mentorship programs are great. You know, and the Lunch Buddy program was great because I'm new. This is my second week with UHY. I love it there.
Second week? Get out.
Yeah. And so
they really threw you in there. Deep end here.
This is still part of the interview process.
Is this?
Right. They're still dating me. I like to kind of look at the environment of where I'm going. And that was a big factor for me is as I'm walking around talking to people, it's great if they're like, you know, we have this Lunch Buddy program where you will be, if you choose to participate, you will be paired with someone that you might not have spoken with before. It's great for me because
you don't know a lot of
people yet. I don't know anybody yet. And it's great for me because we recruit internally too. I need to know, you know, the types of people that we have and if people aren't happy, why? And so we need to really keep in touch with that. So I think that kind of thing's important. But I think if you create a diverse enough and you really pay attention to your hiring process and you really invest in it and it's not just like a fly by the seat of your pants question here and let's talk on the phone for 30 minutes. If you really invest in it, then you'll have people who are naturally going to be drawn to their mentors there just without you having to push it. And I've been fortunate enough everywhere that I have been before is I've been able to find a mentor and learn from them in that sense, because fortunately I've been places where they do invest in their people and they do want to have people there that, you know, can share their knowledge with people. And that was actually one of the things I said is that when I was being interviewed is I saw people who were, you know, clearly driven, hungry, but approachable. And that's who I want to surround myself with. It's not that that's another factor that I want to see is kind of that open door, transparency.
That
thing.
Culture of openness and helping and generosity of spirit.
Absolutely. But nice is great, but I want to see drivers. I want to see
people making things happen.
Yeah, people who make decisions and make things happen. Exactly. Right. So, you know,
so bureaucracy is a turnoff. There's a lot of, you know, no one can pull the trigger. Everybody's got to have a meeting to decide when the next meeting is.
Oh, yeah.
It's just a waste of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Total turnoff.
So, Amy, any final takeaways, any pieces of advice you would give to companies out there?
I think keep an open mind and stay in touch with your workforce and stay current with making small changes to help accommodate what some of the demands are by today's current workforce.
So, baby steps?
Baby steps. And you don't need to invest in
what's an easy baby step? What would be low-hanging fruit that somebody can do?
There's so many. But I think the biggest one really is if you can demonstrate ways that there's some flexibility. Mm-hmm. The start time doesn't have
to
be 8. The start time can be anywhere until, you know, 9 o'clock. But then you expect that they're going to work a full day. I mean, it depends on the company and where those things can lie. But have ways that there's some flexibility.
Right, because now, Nikki and Russ, like if you see your boss and it's 8:05 and you got to be there at 8 and they look at the clock and they're giving you kind of like the, what are you doing? That's a turnoff, right? Like that's not, you don't feel comfortable. Now you feel like you're being watched. That has a lot of negative ramifications, doesn't it?
I agree if it was agreed upon. I think you should be there.
You should do what you promise. Right. I mean,
you get to your meetings on time.
Right. If you look at me and go, it's 8:05, why aren't you here? And I go, what am I doing wrong performance wise? And you go, nothing. And then I'll go, what's the issue?
Then I'll be here till 5:05. And I'll work on the weekends and I'll answer your emails after hours.
Exactly.
I'll log back in.
It all evens out, right? So being heard, that sounds to me like a big takeaway. That's an important part of this. Now, I hear you guys have a conference, SSOW conference coming up.
We do.
Talk about that?
I just want to kind of give a bit of a highlight about this. So March 6th through 8th, we are going to be down in Orlando for the Shared Services and Outsource Week. It's going to be in Orlando, and it's great for companies that are that have shared service setups or if they're thinking about embarking on a shared services type of model. And UHY will be there. We're hosting a workshop on change management and driving innovation through a culture of continuous improvement. And if anyone is interested in having, you know, more information about it, please reach out to us. We have our event coordinator to reach. Her name is Nicole, and her email to learn more about the SSOW conference is N as in Nicole, AUSBROOKS, and that's at uhy-us.com.
And if they go to uhy-us.com. They have information. They can navigate and find that.
Atlanta office, absolutely. And then right. when you reach the Atlanta office, we certainly
There's
can
a lot
make
of
sure.
Stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, shared services, what type of company would be appropriate?
Shared services is a leading trend, obviously, today. It's a great
large
companies where you can centralize activities or functions for companies. So you can have all of your accounting processed in one area, or maybe you have your
customer service
in
one area. Servicing the entire globe
regardless
from
of
one center.
Business unit.
Now, is there a pain they're having that the...
It's to definitely drive, standardization and
mm-hmm. efficiency. So mm-hmm. if you're having any issues in that area, shared services, this is a great way to learn
Absolutely.
More about it.
Yep. We would love to see you there. So please reach out.
Good stuff. Well, thank you all for being part of this discussion today.
Thank you very much for having us.
You have a good time?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Were you heard?
I feel fulfilled and I feel heard now.
Thank you for listening.
All right. Everybody gets a participation badge for being part of the show today.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you having
really,
us.
Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Cause and Effect Radio.
Today's episode of Cause and Effect Radio has been brought to you by UHY Advisors. For more information, visit uhy-us.com.